Oregon may have been a little bit of a frontier backwater back in like the late 1800s, but it was a fairly important place for the women's movement. And that's really ironic because it was one of the later states to actually give women the right to vote. But one of the real Oregon female pioneers was a woman named Bethenia Owens Adair, who was the West Coast's first female doctor, lived in Oregon. Hers is a great story. She was an unbelievable person, actually. Unfortunately, late in life, she kind of sullied her reputation a little bit by getting into eugenics, but then almost everybody thought eugenics was the way to go in the 1910s and 1920s, so can't really hold that against her. But the archive column I'm going to read you today is about Bethenia Owens Adair. I'm Finn J.D. John, and I write the Offbeat Oregon History column. It runs in various newspapers around the state right now. So you're listening to me reading you an archive column from that column. But I do this every day, or almost every day, or every weekday, rather. And if you already subscribe to the podcast, you know that. And if you don't subscribe to the podcast, well, you should totally check it out. It's at offbeatoregon.com, and then there are links there that you can use to subscribe to it or to join the conversation on the Facebook page or Twitter feed. You can also get it on iTunes, of course. And by the way, if you do, if you don't mind taking a minute to write a review, that'd be great. Little podcasts like this get noticed that way. So today's column first ran in the papers on August 14th, 2010, under the headline, West Coast's First Female Doctor Lived in Oregon. Here we go. Maybe it's for the best that LeGrand Hill turned out to be such a lousy husband. Had he not beaten his wife and whipped their baby, George, Bethenia Hill would likely not have dumped him and gone on to become the West Coast's first female physician, and the women's suffrage movement would have lost one of its brightest stars. Bethenia's decision to leave LeGrand was the more remarkable because she was just 18 when she made it, after 4 years of marriage. Also, this was 1858, and divorce was simply not contemplated. When she left, the neighbors were scandalized. Not that they were likely very surprised. LeGrand was, by all accounts, astonishingly lazy, and the only thing he showed a real talent for was hunting. After he lost their farm to foreclosure, her parents gave them some land and built the shell of a cabin on it for LeGrand to finish out, with things like a floor and a chimney and a cooking area. It remained in that condition for years, with Bethenia doing all the cooking and domestic chores outdoors in all weather, and this was the Willamette Valley of Oregon. But she put up with it, and possibly with some physical abuse as well, until the day he, quote, "whipped my baby unmercifully and struck and choked me." The baby, George, was about 24 months old at the time. Then she was gone, and so was little George. Within a year or two, she was divorced, with full custody and her maiden name back. Suddenly at loose ends, Mrs. Bethenia Owen started leaving George with her mother and going to school. At her mother's house, the little tyke played with his young aunts and uncles. A few years later, she was actually teaching a class of 16 students, two of whom were more advanced than she. Quote, "I took their books home with me, and with the help of my brother-in-law, I managed to prepare the lessons beforehand, and they never suspected my incompetence," she wrote later. I suspect that will be somewhat familiar to most of you teachers out there. It certainly is to me. But teaching and the grueling schedule of piecework jobs, chiefly laundry and sewing, were a means to an end for Bethenia. By working hard and being very thrifty, she saved up enough money to launch a dressmaking and millinery business in Roseburg. This business became very successful and generated enough money for her to send George to the University of California, Berkeley, when he was just 14. Once he was off to college, so was she. One of the skills she'd picked up in her life was medical. Nursing was, in that age, grueling and unappreciated work. Easy to get, hard to do, precisely the kind of work a driven person like Bethenia would take to fill an unexpected gap in her schedule of piecework jobs. Along the way, she discovered she liked medicine. So in 1870, she handed the Roseburg business off to a younger sister and headed east, to a medical school in Philadelphia, one which taught eclectic medicine. She returned a year or so later. Medical schools in the 1870 were somewhat lengthy than they are today, although not necessarily less arduous, and she opened a medical practice. Now, although 1870s medicine was a bit of a Wild West kind of thing, the eclectic medicine was not the mainstream, and its favor was already fading. When young George graduated from Berkeley, she did not consider an eclectic college for him. She sent him off to Willamette University, and 2 years later, he was an M.D. Then she went out and got herself a, quote, real degree. After being turned away from several of the medical college boys' clubs, she found a place at the University of Michigan, and in 1880, after 2 years of study, she had it. Dr. Bethenia Owens, M.D., was ready to take the place she'd earned in the society she had, in a very real sense, conquered. She became one of Portland's most well-known citizens, a good friend of Abigail Scott Duniway, and a powerful force for women's suffrage. She went on to marry Colonel George Adair in 1884 and changed her name to Owens Adair. He seems to have been a problem for her. He spent her money as fast as she earned it on ill-considered and dreamy schemes. Then she retired from practice in 1905, and after moving to Warrenton, died in 1926 at age 86. A modern person will probably find just one major negative thing in Bethenia's story. Like many others of her era, she was a believer in the science, quote, science, of eugenics. She became a powerful voice for forced sterilization, and her advocacy bore fruit in 1925 when the state adopted a statute establishing a eugenics board. In the 60 years after that, some 2,600 odd criminals and people deemed, quote, feeble-minded or insane, had their reproductive organs stripped out, an episode for which then-Governor George Kitzhaber issued a formal apology in 2002. That's it for today. You've been listening to an Offbeat Oregon History Archive column. If you'd like more, there's lots more on the website at offbeatoregon.com, where you can also subscribe to this podcast through RSS or iTunes to have it delivered straight to your device. If you do go to iTunes, please do leave me a review, hopefully a nice one. And while you're at it, do check out my website for my book, which just came out, or it's just coming out. It's called Wicked Portland, the Wild and Lusty Underworld of a Frontier Seaport Town. And if you like this podcast, you're going to like the book too. It's at wicked-portland.com. And if you click the little head in the header, little cameo of a guy, it'll take you to a secret, quote, secret, lost chapter, which you can check out. Everything in this column is covered under a Creative Commons Attribution Sharealike 3.0 license. See offbeatoregon.com/cc for details. Also, if you're ever up in Corvallis, drop me a line, because I'd love to go and have a cup of coffee with you or something like that and talk about history geeky stuff. I'm at finn@offbeatoregon.com, or if you do Twitter, @offbeatoregon.com. That's all I got for today, so have a great day.